Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents The Cartherian Gambit, Book 13, My Ride is a Bitch, by Michael Anderley. Narrated by Colleen Delaney and performed by a full cast. Prologue. Berlin, Germany. Seven locations were tossed out to the group of men and women invited to Germany's Federal Intelligence Operations Center. Dr. Schäuble, a professor borrowed for this project from Humboldt Universität, spoke to those gathered around the long hand-carved rosewood table. He was leaning over the table, looking at the different cards that had been laid out.
We have seven locations, but we only have resources to check three at this time. As you can see, one of these is in Antarctica. It's based on the rumors of people from the Nazi Party. Somebody, possibly the Thule Group, built and left a base in the severe cold. Americans went there in 1947 and had, I've heard, a bad time.
I thought the American situation was just bad weather.
You would think so, but one of the ships was supposedly cut in two. Right now, the Americans are claiming it was weather that forced the fleet exercise to turn around. However, my contacts say the American government is setting up their own expedition to this area on the off chance it might reveal any secrets the Nazis took with them.
He sat down and opened the manila folder in front of him.
If you would all open your folders to the first location for our common vote, we will discuss whether the Nazi base has enough interest from those represented here to be on our shortlist. As you are aware, the German government has the authority to check into these seven locations, and with a significant monetary buy-in, your companies will be able to benefit from technologies we find.
Dr. Schäuble looked up from his papers.
We have someone to speak to us regarding additional Nazi records not shared with the American government. That person has now arrived to update you.
QBS, Archangel, over Japan, 17 hours before the meeting in Japan. John walked toward Bethany Ann's suite, the hairs on the back of his neck standing up. Gabrielle had said she hadn't seen or spoken with Bethany Ann for a few hours. She thought Bethany Ann was with him or one of the other guys, but John had confirmed she wasn't with any of them. The last time anyone had seen her, she was walking into her suite with Asher, an apple, and a pile of mail that had come up on the last transport.
Archangel.
Yes, John.
Is Bethany Ann asleep?
No, she isn't. I don't have knowledge of her whereabouts at the moment.
That could only mean one of two things. Bethany Ann wasn't on the ship, or she had explicitly told Archangel not to let anyone know where she was. Or both. John entered, walked through the outer suite, and knocked on Bethany Ann's bedroom door. Nothing.
Archangel, this is John Grimes.
Yes, I recognize you, John. There is no need to tell me who you are.
There is this time. Archangel, according to my right as a queen's bitch, I am implementing queen's permission to enter Bethany Ann's bedroom suite.
Approved, John.
The locks of the suite disengaged.
Bethany Ann? B.A. Boss?
The suite was empty. John noticed her bed was made and stepped around to her personal closet. It was closed and locked.
Fuck. Archangel, please unlock this door. I promise not to step foot into the room.
You know she isn't in there, John.
Yes, I know that. I need to see what she took with her.
This was much better than the rooms in the Florida house, where no one could open the door from the outside. Here, Archangel could open and close, lock and unlock all doors. He pulled the door open, the lights came on, and he peered into her closet. Her pistols, leather pants, and her protective chest piece were missing. Her katana was on its stand. John turned, stopped, and then looked back. Her shorter sword, the wakizashi, was missing. So it was probably humans, not Forsaken.
Thank you, Archangel.
He turned to her master suite's bath. It, like all of her rooms, was huge. He looked in and saw an envelope and a piece of notebook paper. John stepped over to her vanity, which was triple wide, with two sinks and a large area between for makeup and other stuff. John thought it was a bit much. Bethany Ann rarely wore more than a little blush and maybe some lipstick. He read the note, which was written in a young person's handwriting.
Miss Ann, I'm not sure you can help, but my father is in trouble. My mother was taken by evil people who hurt her and then hurt my dad. They want him to help them because he works on science, and they want something. They made him promise not to tell the police. Since he can't tell anyone, and I can't tell the police either, I thought maybe someone powerful like you could help my mom and my dad. If not, I understand. I know you are pretty busy with your ships and stuff. Thank you for listening, Anne. P.S. I love your last name. It is the same as my first name.
John could see the spots where Bethany Ann's tears must have soaked into the page. He shook his head, grabbed the envelope with the address, and started walking out of her suite. John now knew the approximate where and the why. He just had to figure out what to do about it. John held the small call button on his collar.
This is John Grimes. Our queen is AWOL.
QBS Archangel over Japan, 18 hours before the meeting in Japan. Bethany Ann reached out to grab the offered mail.
Thanks, Kevin.
She grabbed an apple from the fruit bowl on the sideboard.
Asher.
She heard Asher get up from under the table where Team BMW was eating. They were such wusses about feeding him. One sad face, and all three men caved and tossed him food. Then they blamed each other for being the one who fed him. Asher caught up with Bethany Ann on her way to the suite, and she ruffled his head. She would swear he had grown a couple of inches.
Tom?
Yes?
Could Asher grow in size after coming out of the pod?
Yes, that's possible. The nanites might have decided he needed to change for some reason, possibly due to his continued physical exercise during your training. We can always put him back in the pod and have a look.
No, it's not that important. At least not yet.
Bethany Ann nodded to the guards near the doors leading to the bitches and elites areas and finally reached her suite. She could have just walked there etherically, but it was good for everyone to see her. She entered her room, the door having been already opened by Archangel.
Thanks.
Biting into her apple, she walked into her bathroom. Asher jumped up on her bed.
Hey, don't shed all over my bed. I had to get the last bedspread cleaned. What the hell were you pissed about anyway? That's not my fault. Your lazy ass didn't go to the cafeteria in time to catch them. Bullshit. They aren't required to eat at the same time every day because you have a preference. Besides, you always have dog food available.
Bethany Ann grinned when she heard Asher's response. She tossed the apple core into the trash can and started going through the mail. She picked up the first letter.
Ooh, I've won an island. File 13.
Then she tackled the next envelope.
I've been asked to join a symposium on technology next month.
Another file 13. She saw an envelope in nice block handwriting.
Weird.
She read the letter inside. Then she read it again, slowly.
Adam, track this address. Is this legitimate?
Yes. There is a family of three living at that address in Las Vegas.
Who does the dad work for?
Security blocked. Unknown at this time.
Seriously? Fuck. Can you figure out if there's a problem?
The daughter, Anne, is 12. She has been absent from school for 2 days. Previously, she had not missed the last 182 days of school.
Trap or real? Trap or real?
Are they mutually exclusive?
No, Tom, they are not.
Are you going to send someone to check it out?
No, I'm going to do this. It needs a deft touch and a woman's hand.
What about Gabrielle?
I don't want to mess up her time with Eric.
What about... Oh, right.
What do you mean, right?
You're bored.
I've always heard the problem with royalty is that they don't stay connected with the people. I'm not going to let that happen to me.
You're bored.
That too.
Just the three of us?
No, it will be the four of us.
Well, thank God. For a second, I thought you would go and not take any support.
Bethany Ann started toward her closet.
Asher, let's go rescue a little girl. I know, right? Silly of my guards to leave me alone and allow me to get into mischief all by my little lonesome.
She changed clothes and loaded her weapons. Spying the Wakizashi, she smiled and grabbed the shorter blade.
Come here, you. We haven't partied in a while.
She looked down at her boots on the floor.
Ugh, no boots this time. Pumas it is.
She grabbed a jacket and hid her weapons.
Archangel, lock this door.
Why did I think you were going to be mature about this?
Beats the fuck out of me. Let's go, my furry white guard.
Bethany Ann grabbed Asher's neck and took a step forward, disappearing. Denver, Colorado. Bethany Ann enjoyed the crisp air for a couple of hours as she and Asher drove through the mountains heading toward Las Vegas. She and Asher had stepped into one of her arrival rooms at the Colorado headquarters. It took her a little while to sneak outside. Unfortunately, the modified F-12 Berlinetta that had been upgraded for her was locked up in the garage and had an on-duty guard. It had required her to order him not to speak about her taking the car for 24 hours. Leaving the base forced her to order personnel at two additional security points to not mention her presence, at least for the same length of time. She looked in her rearview mirror to confirm no one was behind her, and then...
Tom, punch it!
The car lifted off the road and started flying through the night sky. Within 15 minutes, they sat down on a small road outside North Las Vegas. She entered the address into the onboard navigation and drove into town as the barest hint of dawn was cracking the sky.
Hey, no shedding on my leather.
She reached over and brushed a few of Asher's white hairs off the seat.
We should look for a girlfriend for you. Maybe she could teach you not to shed on the seats.
Asher glanced at Bethany Ann and cocked his head to the side.
I don't know how to tell if she's smart. Probably the best test will be if she bites you in the ass the first chance she gets.
He turned and looked out the window.
I could have easily given you the directions to your destination.
I know that, Adam, but sometimes the little computers need attention too.
You just wanted to play with your new toy.
You say that as if it's a bad thing, Tom.
The directions took her to the west side of Las Vegas. Bethany Ann could see the Red Rock Casino a couple of miles away, and Red Rock Canyon just beyond it. She drove toward a neighborhood security gate. Casper was reading the latest Vegas news when a car pulled off Spanish Trail and the headlights flashed through their window. He looked up in time to see a Ferrari as he grabbed his clipboard to record a new arrival. While he couldn't see inside too well, he did notice what looked like a large white dog in the front seat. He stepped out of the air-conditioned guardhouse, closing the door behind him. The Ferrari's tinted window started dropping. So did Casper's jaw. The beautiful woman in the driver's seat didn't look like she needed the car to sell herself, but this was Vegas. Casper supposed she could be an elite companion. If she was, he couldn't afford her. She smiled at him and nodded at his name badge.
Hello. Casper, is it? I'm here to surprise my brother.
Her voice, velvet smooth over steel, warmed his soul.
Would you mind letting me do that without putting me down on your little notepad?
Moments later, Casper stepped back inside and put his clipboard back in the slot. All the homes in this gated community were well maintained. Bethany Ann drove up in front of the 4,000 square foot two-story. It had a Spanish brick roof and a nicely kept lawn. She slid out of her car and walked around to open Asher's door. He jumped out and looked around, sniffing the air. A few cars were leaving for work already, but her car showed everyone living in this neighborhood that she belonged. The two of them walked up to the door.
He has visitors.
Dieter looked out the window through his binoculars.
An attractive woman and a dog.
Gunther drank his coffee as his partner maintained the surveillance.
Not exactly your standard military rescue team.
He walked up beside his partner.
Maybe his family?
Can't tell. Here, take a look. I'm going to wake up Klaus in case we have a snag in the plans. Today, Jaden's supposed to pull the data in exchange for his wife.
Gunther put his coffee down and accepted the binoculars.
Yeah, attractive. Weird that she's wearing a jacket in Las Vegas. Dealer plates on the car. I can't see what state. Perhaps she is not from around here.
I don't know. Klaus, wake up. We have an unexpected visitor.
Here?
No, across the street. We might need to intercept, so get ready.
He returned to his surveillance partner.
What now?
She's knocking on the door. Is the volume up?
Seconds later, they heard the door across the street open, and Mason's voice came in loud and clear.
Hello?
I'm sorry, Mr. Jaden, but the Clark County School District is concerned about your daughter, Anne. She's missed 2 days of school already.
Anne? Yes, she's sick.
May I see her?
What? I'm sorry. Who did you say you were again?
My name is Bethany Ann.
If anyone had looked straight up, they would have seen a tiny black dot in the sky. A pod, where John Grimes was listening to the conversation below.
Archangel, are you capturing the audio from wireless signals?
Yes, John. Wireless signals that are coming from the house where Bethany Ann is, sending to one of the houses across the street.
You can't tell which one?
No, only direction. It is either the house directly across or the one to the south of it.
John continued listening to the conversation.
My name is Bethany Ann, and I help the Clark County School District maximize their income by confirming all able-bodied children are attending school. It reduces truancy.
In a Ferrari.
John wondered how his boss was going to answer this question. He could hear the pause, almost seeing her turn around to confirm that, yes, she had driven a Ferrari.
Well, yes, it's my new car. You see, I'm a helper for the school district in the mornings. The rest of the day, I play a trophy wife.
Up in the sky, John was slapping the side of the pod, trying to control his laughter.
Oh, God. Archangel, please tell me you're recording this.
I am, John.
He wiped a tear of laughter from his face.
Oh, sweet blessed mother of Saint, payback is a bitch. I'm going to use this.
She is a school helper?
Klaus walked downstairs and into the room, adjusting his holster and slipping in his pistol.
American schools get paid by how many children are in the classroom each day. It is very expensive for a local school district when a child is out sick.
This could be a problem. We only need him to go to work one last time. Do we snatch the woman or what?
We only do something if she won't leave.
The voice of the lady in front of Mason changed. Sweeter somehow and yet more commanding.
Let me in, Mason.
Mason opened the door wider and stepped back.
Why don't you come in, Miss Anne?
Bethany Ann stepped into the home behind Asher, who had jumped in ahead of her, and she looked around.
My name is just... never mind. Asher, find out if we have a problem.
Asher took off and ran up the steps.
No!
Mason scrambled behind Bethany Ann, pushing her out of the way. Mason grabbed the railing, jumping to the third step. He was running up the stairs and was surprised when he stumbled off balance, feeling as though he had been pushed aside. He righted himself and continued racing to his daughter's room. She absolutely, positively couldn't leave that bed.
Scheiße!
Klaus bolted out of the room and ran down the hall to the front door.
If that bitch pulls the child off the bed, the operation is a bust.
Gunther and Dieter were hot on his heels as he yanked the front door open, all three men racing down the front walkway. John's pod swooped down out of the sky. The three men hadn't made it to the street when the top of the house exploded. They all covered their heads and flattened themselves on the lawn as debris pelted them. A large piece impaled the grass just a foot from Gunther's face. Standing up and pulling their pistols, they turned back toward the home. There was fire pouring out of the top windows.
Scheiße! We were so close!
They jogged over to the front door. Dieter was the first to notice the object descending to their left. Thinking a large part of the house was landing, he jerked his head.
Look out!
The men ducked, but nothing hit the ground. When they looked up once again, a large white man, vitriolic hatred painted on his face, stood to their left. He stared at them and aimed two unique-looking guns at their heads. The three men pointed their guns back.
Who are you?
I am the man who is going to kill you for who you just blew up.
They eyed each other for a few seconds. The staring match was interrupted by a voice from behind them.
You cock-biting, ass-backward, fuck-faced, dickless, alien tramp-whackers! That fucking hurt!
One of the three men turned around. The two-facing John didn't like the smile that graced his face or his next statement.
Boys, I was just going to kill you. Now you will wish for death by the time she gets done with you.
The trophy wife?
You, I kill first. No, you may not bite his nuts off.
Dieter, just shoot the bitch. We have to get out of here.
Gentlemen, I command you to put down your guns.
They felt themselves complying with her orders. John, keeping his pistols on them, walked over and kicked their guns behind him.
Bethany Ann, we do need to go. Where are the people in the house?
Colorado.
She turned to look at her car.
Fucking ape titties! That was my new Ferrari!
John glanced at it and had to agree. The car's body was messed up from the explosion. It wasn't looking too good.
Well, that settles it.
She walked to Dieter, who was still looking at her.
Hope no one has video going.
When she slapped him, the man disappeared.
What the hell?
Gunther was wrapped on the back of his head and he also disappeared. She moved to Klaus.
Don't say a fucking word. And if you and your two goons want to live, I would suggest not walking far from where I send you. I might not be able to find your useless asses.
Where will you sit?
Oh!
The back of his head exploded in pain, and he disappeared from view.
Yeah, good point. John, Pod?
Up above us.
Leave it.
She turned to look at Asher.
Let's go, Boy Wonder. No, I'm not your damn sidekick, you four-footed walking rug. Now come here or I won't get you a date. I won't help you with any female, and we won't go on the internet to search either. So take that and chew on it, my dear opposable thumb-lacking pain in the ass. Adam, find and destroy their surveillance equipment if you can.
If I can?
What if it isn't connected to the internet?
I was surfing the radio waves.
Tom, take care of the pod and the car, please.
Yes, oh wife of trophies.
Tom.
Yes?
Doghouse for you, alien for brains.
She grabbed John and Asher, and the three of them disappeared. The Ferrari took off into the sky, leaving behind a mess, a lot of questions, and not many answers. QBS Archangel over Japan, 16 and a half hours before the meeting in Japan. John shook his head as he walked into the pod bay with Gabrielle striding behind him. For the last 400 feet, all the way from the bitch's quarters, he had been listening to Gabrielle complaining about him not taking her along.
So why are you going instead of me? Or why not you and me? At least answer that question.
John grinned. He allowed his go bag to slide off his shoulder and he put it into his pod before turning around and looking down at the vampire.
Because I've got one beautiful female to deal with out in public. I don't need two, especially since you just got nominated to be here to represent Bethany Ann.
Who the hell told you I was the best option for that role?
Archangel. She said Bethany Ann would most likely choose you since you had the role when we all went to China.
Gabrielle glared up at John.
Shit.
She headed back the way they had come.
Don't think I'll forget this, John.
No, that would make life too easy.
Gabrielle reached the exit.
I heard that.
John looked back to make sure the doors had closed.
Of course you did. You can hear an ant fart in a hurricane.
As John settled in the pod and started locking in, the pod's doors closed and sealed.
Archangel, that was Gabrielle.
She is telling me I need to discuss girls sticking together with her sometime.
Does she not realize you could just as easily look like a guy?
Probably deep down, but since my avatar is Bethany Ann, I doubt it comes to mind.
No, probably not. Take me out. Why did you want her to stay behind?
Because I've analyzed the data, John. You will go and support Bethany Ann. You won't judge her, and you won't condemn her. In all things, you are her rock, and she leans on you. You are the best choice.
The pod slipped through the gravitic shield into space. In moments, it was streaking through space 80 miles above Earth.
Well, you might as well take me to the address, Archangel.
Understood, John. You will arrive in 18 minutes.
One half day's march from Shenongjia Peak, Hubei. Bei leaned against a tree, pushing his pack into a small space between the branches. That allowed him to take some of the weight off his back. Zhu nodded to his friend as he approached.
Any idea if our trackers have a clue where we are going?
Yes. We were chosen to follow the second group who left. I listened in on the conversations, and it seems our group met up with another group. The new group stopped for a little while, then left.
That's good, right? That means our group slowed down, and we won't have to follow them too far.
Bay. They stopped and had a meeting with something that joined them. That something left cat prints, our tracker said. He wasn't happy about it.
Why not? We know they can turn into some sort of werecat. So what is their problem? We all have silver rounds on us.
Zhu looked into the forest, up into the limbs of the trees above them.
Bay, what do cats do more than most animals?
Bay followed his friend's glance as he thought about it.
They hunt.
They hunt. And now they are hunting us with the intellect of both a human and a cat.
Oh, that's not good. You think they are setting up a trap?
Jan told Shun and me to count on it.
Bay nodded and checked his rifle, making sure his silver rounds were loaded for the fourth time this morning. The Etheric.
How do we know she wasn't lying to us?
Do you know where the fuck we are?
Klaus looked into the grayness in every direction.
I can't see shit. Neither can the two of you. She said she would find us unless we moved.
Like I trust that woman with anything. Have you finally figured out who she is?
Yes. I know where I saw her face.
And?
She is the head of TQB.
Klaus looked into the distance, but nothing changed. He still couldn't see anything. It was like looking through the fog on a cold morning.
What kind of tech does she have if she can send us to some other part of Earth, like that?
What makes you think that we are on Earth?
TQB Base, Colorado, USA. Mason accepted a cup of coffee from Jasmine. She had taken him and his daughter from the room where they had appeared after the gray place. Now he was sitting at a table, with Anne asleep in the chair next to him, her head on his shoulder. Her arms were wrapped around one of his, making sure he didn't move while she slept. He knew his job was incredibly secret, but honestly hadn't thought it would ever affect his wife or his child. Now, the reality of how casually he had played with their safety shamed him. The last week and a half had been a nightmare. Given some of the secret technology he worked on, he had never expected to be so easily awed by the abilities of anyone besides the people with whom he worked. Mason wished he had some paper or something so he could write his thoughts down. He kept going through the events, trying to sear them into his long-term memory. Maybe one day he would understand the technology she must have used to accomplish the act. He had let her into the house when the dog had taken off upstairs. He couldn't let Anne off of her bed or the bombs would go off. He had run after the dog and stumbled on the steps as if he had been pushed aside. Pushed aside. His face tightened. Had she run past him that fast? He made it up the stairs to see the woman, already in the room, speaking in a quick, clipped voice to the dog. She hadn't moved Anne yet, but she saw him enter the room. She popped him on the forehead and everything went gray. Then, suddenly, the woman was there in the gray place with Anne and the dog. She told him they had to go and handed Anne to him. When he took her, she grabbed his arm and the dog. Then suddenly the four of them were in a rock-walled room. The woman with the dog commanded him to wait there with Anne, that someone would come to get them. Then she and the dog were gone again. Where the hell was he going to go? He had been holding Anne tight to his chest when there had been a knock on the door. And this woman asked him to follow her to this room and brought them some breakfast. Now here he was, with Anne, wondering what would happen to his wife Sheila now. The Etheric. The three men heard the voices before they could discern the vague outlines of two people walking toward them.
I know what you're thinking, but I'm saying that killing them here makes it easier to clean up. As in, there isn't any cleanup.
A third figure trailing the first two resolved, and a dog emerged from the mist. The gargantuan figure beside the woman seemed to be trying to argue in favor of the three of them.
I understand you didn't like returning and getting singed in the fire. You either, Asher.
I could have been unlucky enough to come back into a broken piece of wall, and that would have been a real downer.
They were getting closer.
How come you guys didn't?
I can peek out now. I figured out how to barely look and make sure. The fucking fire was still damned hot. That shit burned like a motherfucker.
She was close enough for the three men to discern her features.
Ah, here are my three camel-humping teabaggers now.
The dog stopped and laid down on the ground.
So, where's the wife? Nothing? Oh, you three are so out of your league that life as you know it doesn't exist. This is like a pro team against a tank full of goldfish. Dead goldfish.
She reached under her jacket and pulled out a scabbarded short sword.
You know, for some reason, there is this misunderstanding that good people should be nice to Schweinehunde such as yourselves. Personally, I don't agree. And since my overly large friend here really isn't my conscience, this isn't a good cop, bad cop routine like you're thinking. So you can all kiss my ass. I know. Stay back since you hate getting blood out of your fur. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Dieter, my friend, you can go.
She had stabbed Dieter through the gut with her sword. Her left hand was choking him, and she easily held him off the ground while he struggled. She looked over her shoulder to the man behind her.
I told you, much cleaner here.
All I said was it would be easier to get the wife's location from people who were alive, even if you had to leave them alive.
When she turned toward them, Gunther and Klaus took another involuntary step back. The figure in front of them was from a nightmare. Her face had red, glowing eyes, her teeth had grown, and she smiled at them like they were snacks.
I never said I had to have live people to get my answers, John. I can always ask them when I kill them the second time.
Dieter had stopped struggling in her grip. His lifeless body was still hanging above the ground, his blood puddling at her feet.
She's in a warehouse on the east side out by Green Valley in Vegas, I swear.
Shut up, Gunther. That is our only negotiation card.
Scared or not, Klaus knew the woman was the only thing that might get them out of this predicament. She seemed to finally notice that Dieter had expired.
That was uneventful.
She tossed the body aside. Klaus and Gunther were shocked. Dieter's lifeless body had been thrown 20 feet away into the mist. She hadn't even noticed his weight. The frightening woman took a step toward the two men.
Who paid you to do this?
Will you let us go if we tell you what we know?
Klaus Weber, stand still and tell me what you know. Who paid you to do this? Who paid
Klaus
you to do
this? Klaus bit down hard, trying to keep the information to himself. He kept hearing her command resonating in his mind, and he played what he would say to her over and over.
That's enough. You don't need to tell me multiple times.
Bethany Ann, we don't have time to track all this down right now. We need to get back to the Archangel. We have a meeting with the Japanese pretty soon.
Okay, fine. I don't think this prick knows anything anyway. Sounds like a typical dark web merc job. I know someone bored who needs something to do.
Why? What do trophy wives do except check on truant children and blow up houses?
Shut up, Tom.
Klaus, aghast that he had been talking the whole time he thought he was keeping the secrets to himself, never saw the flick of the blade that cut his head off. Gunther's mouth was agape as Klaus's body dropped to the ground. Bethany Ann cleaned her sword on Klaus's shirt. She looked up at Gunther.
And now we come to Miney Moe.
Mason Jaden woke up, his arm numb from Anne's tight grip. He heard people coming down the hall outside his room. His mind foggy, he tried to remember how he and his daughter had ended up in here and realized he must have not at all for a few minutes. Then he heard it. He heard her voice.
Sheila?
He couldn't quite make out the words the voice was speaking, since she was still too far away, but Mason thought it was his wife. He looked down to figure out how to extricate himself from his daughter, but she was already waking up.
Mom? Mom?
Baby? Mason?
Mason's chair shot back to the wall, and he grabbed Anne's hand as they reached the door to see Sheila running down the hall. They ran toward her, and the family reunion was intense as the three hugged. Bethany Ann and John left the three some personal space to reunite.
Ma'am?
Yes?
Jasmine, one of the base logistics and planning employees who had been helping, smiled.
Ma'am, what do you want me to do for the family?
Bethany Ann turned toward the family. John noticed she frowned and whispered to herself.
I hate this.
Her eyes went vacant for a second.
Well, fuckity fuck. Call Archangel. We need this family with us. John and I are heading out. When Mason asks, tell him the Queen has said she will be able to protect his family much better than those who failed him.
Yes, ma'am.
Come on, John. Let's fetch the White Wonder Dog and get back to the ship.
They walked past Jasmine, who continued to wait patiently at a distance from the reunited family. She listened to Bethany Ann and John talking as they walked down the hall.
Did I understand that Asher is looking for a bitch, or is that your idea?
Nice play on words, Mr. Grimes.
I try my best when speaking to trophy wives.
John, I swear, if you keep up that shit, payback will be a bitch.
Oh, you pray to him too?
QBS Archangel, above Japan. Tabitha's pod moved slowly through the gravitic shield holding the air in the pod bay on the Archangel. Barnabas was waiting for her as the door cracked open. She unclipped herself and smiled at him.
Hey, Bigby!
Her grin widened when Barnabas frowned at her new nickname for him. She had decided that if she was going to live for a few hundred years, she was going to do her dead-level best to tweak him every chance she got. Her latest choice was pet names, since you always have to be hacking and testing what you think might work. She wasn't sure if this new name was going to last for more than a couple of months or, hell, went into the next century. Barnabas turned his grimace into a smile, understanding that she had just laid down a challenge.
Hello, Tabitha. I trust your trip was enjoyable?
She followed him toward the pod bay exit. He looked over his shoulder at her.
Do you know why we wanted you to join us here on the Archangel?
Honestly, Bigby, I figure you've got something that needs doing, and you need just the right sass and ass to get the job done.
Barnabas hung his head. Tabitha might be more of a challenge than he had ever encountered in his many, many centuries.
I don't recall many ladies ever telling me that they have the right, and I quote, sass and ass to get the job done. Usually they tell men to stop looking down there and that their faces are up here.
Hey, I can't help it if some women don't understand just how over-empowered they are compared to men. We not only have the brains, but we also have the bodies to confuse the best of them. And in the fog of war, men are putty in our hands. Okay, some women have the brains, but not every one of us.
Tabitha caught up and was now walking beside him. He glanced sideways at her.
The fog of war, Tabitha?
Sure. Anytime a man is around an attractive woman, it's war. You might not think so, but their wives know it and their girlfriends know it. It just happens. It's chemical. Do I have to pull up the physiological books to discuss this with you? I would think after 1,000 years this would be old news to you. Hell, you're practically a talking cadaver who's walking around.
I'm not, nor have I ever been a cadaver.
Oh, this was so delicious. Tabitha gave herself 3 points and figured she was up 5-2 so far. Barnabas had earned 2 secret points for making her catch up with him.
Bigby, I bet I wasn't even alive the last time you did the horizontal mambo. I'm willing to bet you weren't even assaulting with a friendly weapon when my parents were children.
Tabitha, please remember I lived in a monastery until relatively recently. What are you talking about?
Buttering the biscuit? Checking the oil? No? Damn, number one, just how long were you in that cave?
Ugh.
She had to be up 12-2 at least.
Fine, I have a ton of euphemisms. How about shrimping the Barbie? Oh crap, that's something from Australia, never mind. Slamming the clam? No? Big B, didn't you ever just screw a chick?
Tabitha finally realized that Barnabas was barely able to contain a smirk. His eyes gave him away.
Ugh, how long have you known what I was talking about?
He finally let loose with the smile he had been holding back.
Since the score was 5-2.
What? Hey, I didn't say that out loud.
Barnabas kept walking. She closed her eyes.
Fuck!
She had forgotten he could read minds. TQB Base, Colorado, USA. Following Jasmine down a corridor, Mason held his wife's hand and carried Anne. For a 12-year-old, she was still quite small and light. Even so, his arm was dying a second time.
Mason, what's happening?
The family had time to spend together, to just enjoy being a family. The lady here at the base had given them all the food they wanted. Anne had sat in Sheila's lap the whole time. No matter how much Mason tried to convince Anne differently, she was sure her mom had been taken because she'd been ugly to her. Mason had tried to tell her arguing with moms was what girls her age did. Now that Anne had her mom back, she was being the most obedient daughter ever. And that would last at least until she wasn't scared anymore of her mom being taken a second time. Which led Mason back to Sheila's question.
We're going to TQB's home base. I'm to speak to the CEO.
I thought the lady said you need to talk to the Queen?
They followed Jasmine out of the main office's doors into the early evening's darkening skies.
Same person, apparently. Her group is pulled off of Earth, so she's setting up a monarchy.
Why does she want you?
Mason saw the black shipping container and two men, both with weapons, standing at the back, one door open.
I think she wants answers.
Why did they help us? Is it because of your job? I know I'm not supposed to ask, but you have to give me something here. Those men were looking for information from you.
Yes, they were. And no, I don't think they're helping us because of my job. I don't know why.
Anne squirmed in his arm and lifted her blonde head.
I asked.
What? Asked who?
Anne used her left hand to pull some hair out of her face.
I sent a letter to Ms. Bethany Ann asking for help.
How did you do that?
I heard the men talking to you when Mom first disappeared. I wrote a letter and sent it. No one at school asked me about it. Well, Josephine made fun of me a little and said I was writing to Santa Claus.
I imagine she did.
When they reached the shipping container, Jasmine nodded at the two men.
These are the three the Queen wants to speak to. VIP soft delivery.
Aye, ma'am. VIP soft delivery.
He smiled at the family. Sheila noted his huge arms.
My name is Scott. He's Daryl. Trust me when I say you will be absolutely safe with us.
Not to be rude, but in a container?
Scott grinned and pointed up.
No. The Queen said VIP soft delivery.
Mason and Sheila looked up. Four sleek fighters were hovering 100 feet in the air.
Are those,
Yes, those are Black Eagles. There's nothing on this earth I'm aware of that's going to get through our guard. The Queen wants you safe, and we tend to go overboard for her.
I see that.
Mason was awed. His group had tried to pull as much information about those ships as they could. From what he had found out about them, and what he knew about his own people's abilities, he had to agree with Daryl. Those four planes could probably decimate a small country.
Sorry we don't have our best quality multi-seat pods yet. Those are in production. But if you would jump on board, we need to be back on the Archangel in about 25 minutes before we all drop back in.
Drop in where?
Mason stepped ahead of her into the large black rectangular box.
The gravity well. We need to be prepared for Bethany Ann's introduction in a couple of hours.
Scott closed the door behind them as Daryl made sure everyone was getting clipped in correctly. This container, modified for larger groups, had 15 seats on each side of the long walls.
Sorry, sweetie, but we can't let you sit on your dad's lap. It's against regulations.
Anne sat between her parents.
Am I going to get to meet Ms. Anne?
Miss Anne? Sorry, her full name is Bethany Anne.
Well, then what's her last name? I thought my first name was her last name. That's kind of embarrassing.
Trust me, your letter got to Bethany Anne just fine, young lady, and I'm sure she'll speak to you soon. Unfortunately, she has meetings right now.
Who is she meeting with?
Daryl crossed to the other side, sat, and buckled into a seat next to Scott.
The Japanese leadership and royalty.
QBS Archangel. Barnabas slipped behind the desk in his office as Tabitha sat in the chair facing him.
Why aren't you outside with the Queen?
We don't want all of our faces on video cameras. So we're only showing the minimum number of people necessary.
Is that why I haven't seen Stephen lately?
No. You haven't seen Stephen because he spends his off time with a particular lady. It seems he has lost a battle due to those assets and the fog of war you were speaking about earlier, and is enjoying life even more than he thought he could.
No shit? El Stevo has a woman? Who is it?
Barnabas grabbed a folder, moved it in front of him, and opened it.
Let's not try to do research for As the Archangel Turns right now. We do have a case to discuss.
Wow, you have been catching up. How do you know about soap operas?
Barnabas glanced at the ceiling of his office.
Please give me strength. Bethany Ann would be upset if any accidents happened to Tabitha.
Uncle B, you know I'm just playing with you. There's no need to get stressed out. I'm sure I can set up a nice, relaxing Friday night date for you if you'd like.
He eyed his female ranger.
No. Let's not and say we didn't. In fact, let's not and never suggest it again. Now focus.
He gave her such a frown that Tabitha understood she had pushed enough. Fun time was over.
What we have is a little bit of information. Three names you can track down, and the request to find out who hired them.
Tabitha chewed on the inside of her cheek and cocked her head to the right.
If I find out who hired them, what am I supposed to do?
You're a Queen's Ranger, so that decision is up to you.
Oh.
The mantle of responsibility suddenly weighed heavily on her shoulders.
I kind of like it when I'm just told to kick their ass, not when I have to decide if the ass kicking is warranted.
Get used to it.
Naranara Prefecture, Japan. Bethany Ann stood waiting for her team to leave the ship. The noise in the stadium was loud.
Yuko has hugged her father. This is good, right?
Yes, Adam. That's an excellent sign.
She wondered why he was asking her to confirm something he could look up for himself. She added another mental mark in the Becoming Human column. There had been a number of conversations about what Bethany Ann should wear for this event. Once the women got involved, what they were thinking bordered on the ridiculous. While the women knew Bethany Ann would very rarely read minds, they failed to realize that Barnabas did it as a matter of course. Therefore, when Bethany Ann happened to have Barnabas join them during one of the talks, the ladies weren't guarding their minds, and he quickly discerned they were having fun at her expense. Bethany Ann simply told the women that they would be required to wear whatever she did, even if it was perhaps in an annoying canary yellow or cloying pink color. Their suggestions suddenly became practical.
I am a very reasonable person. I'm not going to go into meetings without weapons, even if they're hidden. I prefer black or darker colors. If you try to dress me in bright colors or pastels, I'll consider tying you upside down and using you for shark bait. If you want me in high heels, I better not have sore feet because of them.
The team ended up choosing an outfit with a tailored jacket and pants instead of a dress. She might have pants with hems that ended above her ankles, showing off her shoes, or some that almost hit the floor, hiding the shoes. Today, her outfit was comprised of lighter fabrics, but she had similar outfits that had more leather. All in all, she liked the general style. With her hair up as it was, the silver hairpins added a nice touch. Jean Dukes was working on individual small rods that would spit tungsten slugs, yet didn't look like pistols. Bethany Ann loved Jean's devious mind. The lady truly was a master of kinetic destruction. Her team, probably already working on their team name, came to work with a purpose every morning. When John saw her, he couldn't resist a comment.
Looks good, TW.
That damned trophy wife audio recording with Mason had been all over the ship before she got back. John told her he considered it a penalty for leaving without her guards, and she should take her punishment with grace. Bethany Ann about tore another strip off of him until he reminded her to think about how he felt when he thought she had died in the blast. She stopped arguing, thought about it, and kissed him on the cheek.
I'm sorry for making you fret. You get 72 hours.
That was the last of it. She wasn't allowed to say anything about the jokes for 3 days. Three long-ass days. The grapevine on the ship reported that it was open season on the boss for 3 days. She noticed a countdown clock in the forward cafeteria on the ship. Oh, yes. She was now a firm believer in praying to Saint Payback is a Bitch. She started walking out on the stadium floor, and the noise was moderately deafening. She concentrated to reduce the impact, and the pain, from the audio overload until she could handle it better. It only took a few seconds before she was climbing the steps to the stage behind John and Eric, with Daryl and Scott trailing her. Bethany Ann started shaking hands until she got to where Yuko was standing with her parents. Yuko bowed to her, followed immediately by her parents. Bethany Ann bowed slightly in response.
Father, Mother, I want to introduce you to my boss, the CEO of TQB Enterprises, Her Royal Highness, Queen Bethany Ann.
After greeting them and bowing again, Bethany Ann left the family. Yuko's father's mouth was open, and a tear trickled down Yuko's face. For the next few minutes, Bethany Ann was introduced to the local and national political representatives on stage. Then she was shown the microphone and asked to speak to the crowd.
Adam, I want you to connect to the stadium sound system. Translate my English into Japanese.
Bethany Ann smiled at the crowds.
Hello to those here in the stadium and those who are watching on television or via video on the internet. I am known as Her Royal Highness, Queen Bethany Ann. I am also known as the CEO of TQB Enterprises, among other things.
She waved gracefully at the ship in the middle of the stadium and then pointed to the Archangel in the sky.
As you can see, we have advanced our technology to the point where even space is achievable. Many of our employees and my personal retinue love Japan's people, love your culture, and admire your resilience in the challenging times our world faces right now. So it was decided to connect with your country and your people. We hope to be able to increase our official diplomatic relations with countries around the world, starting with Japan.
She had to dampen her hearing another 50%. It was complete bedlam in the stadium, driven by the younger people in the crowd. As Bethany Ann waved and turned away from the podium, she saw tears streaming down Yuko's parents' faces.